You're listening to San Antonio Public Library's podcast, Tuned In. This podcast is made possible through the generosity of the San Antonio Public Library Foundation. Our sound engineer is Dan Garcia. Show notes for this episode and other episodes can be found at guides.mysapl.org/saptuned in.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of Tuned In, the San Antonio Public Library podcast. Today, we're going to talk about National Poetry Month, and we have Raquel.
Hello.
We have Dr. Young.
Reggie.
Natalia Trevino.
Thank you. Hello, Edward.
And Octavio Quintanilla.
Hi, everyone.
So let's start off. Reggie, give us a little background about yourself. You know, you're a regular. You're a regular now.
Yeah, I am. This is my third one. But in terms of poetry, I grew up in Chicago as a community poet, and that led me to go to the university where I became edumacated and learned a lot of stuff about poetry that I can't remember, and read poets who didn't relate to me at all. But later in life, sometimes you find value in them when you're trying to write in different forms, and you're reaching out for different influences. But I live in San Antonio now, and still write poetry along with other kinds of literary works.
Okay. Natalia?
Well, I was born in Mexico, and so I grew up here in San Antonio since I was a little girl. And my poetry came in secrets. It came in copying song lyrics from my favorite pop stars, and I didn't really think poetry was something that any living person could do. But somehow creative writing called to me, and so I went to UTSA here in town and continued because there's so much to learn. And now I teach at Northwest Vista College. Okay. And I'm the author of two poetry books.
Which books are they?
Virgin X, which is a chapbook on meditations on the Virgin and all of her complicated names and stories, especially here in our South Texas culture. Mm-hmm. And Lavando la Dirty Laundry.
Okay. Octavio.
Hi, everyone. My name is Octavio. I am originally from the Rio Grande Valley. Yay. I've been living in San Antonio since fall of 2013.
Okay.
Before that, I was teaching at in McAllen, South mm-hmm. Texas College. And I've always loved reading. I don't know if I've always loved poetry, but now I do. And I teach poetry at Our Lady of the Lake University.
Okay.
So we have one common factor among you three. You're all professors. What is that you try to give your students that they may not have now, that you try to instill with them, that you learned when you're coming up, that you want to make sure they take this away from your classes?
Well, if we're talking about poetry, I think it's, one, a love of language. Poetry in many ways is relates to song, and we're used to Natalia was just mentioned that she started writing song lyrics, and I used to do the same. I wanted to write for Motown a long time ago and things like that, because the songs were full of poetry.
True.
Snowball rolling down a snow-covered hill, it's rolling, and things like that. Sometimes I think, and this relates to National Poetry Month, that students don't realize the value of poetry and that it can have in their lives, the value of reading works of that nature and what it tells us about our common human experience. So I think that's one of the things that I try to convey in the classroom to students.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, Reggie. My students, many of them come in with really negative attitudes toward writing. And because we have such a punitive structure in our public education system, and even in the private education system where I worked for a few years, getting students to write a certain way and really forcing them to be academics. And so they come to classes with these negative feelings and a lot of shame. So a lot of my work is showing them poets who they can understand and helping them see that they are surrounded by poetry. They already love poetry. They can't live without their music, as Reggie was saying, and they love rhythm, and they have a really complex interior lives. But how do we draw that out and teach them that language is the way to do it and to do it in a healing way?
Right.
So I really try to encourage them to not give them negative experiences, to write about their past, and to acknowledge that they have so much music in them, so much lyricism in them. Mm-hmm. So I really want to bring confidence and teach them that they have such a great tool inside of them that's really doesn't need to be punished at all.
Okay. Wonderful.
Wow.
Well, in terms of teaching poetry, years back I realized that, I don't know, 24 out of 25 students in my classes are not going to be English majors. They're not going to go on and get PhDs in literature or poetry like I did. And I think that kind of allowed me to make changes on my expectations of them and how they engage with the poetry we read in class and talk about. And I really always try to find ways for them to let me know that they are working with the poems, engaging with the poems, and kind of steering away from the traditional assessments like writing essays, you know. So now I give them options, you know, respond to this creatively, do a video, do something else. I'd rather have a student love poetry than not.
Right, right.
You know, because sometimes it's really easy and I've seen it, for a student to come in loving something, loving to write poems or to read poems, and then the assessments kill that joy.
Right.
So I want them to leave the class with a sense of joy and knowing that an art form can also be a form of resistance.
Right, right. That resonates with me because I know I was never strong in English, but just the methodology of doing those writing poems or writing your short stories, if you don't follow the let's check this one with the old English, let's check this one, it destroys your creativity and you don't want to do it anymore because you're not doing it from your heart. You're just doing it because you're checking off all the boxes.
Right.
So you want to make sure that you have a creative side that can be projected out so your professors or anyone can experience that. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that answer.
Definitely.
So next I want to ask, can you remember when you first learned of National Poetry Month? What was your first involvement with it as a student, fan of poetry, or as a reader of your own works?
One of you start this time.
Well, I think, it's National Poetry Month has been around, from what I've read, has been around since 1986, right? So 1986... what was I doing? I was trying to survive. I had a crappy car. I was a student, and the last thing I wanted to do was celebrate poetry.
Right.
But I think I really became invested in it, and maybe in 2010 when I was teaching at a charter school in the Rio Grande Valley, and I was teaching older students who were getting a second chance to get their diplomas. You know, a lot of them were parents already, or they had been in trouble with the law and stuff like that. So I think I remember just saying, hey, it's National Poetry Month. And, of course, they're like, what the hell is that, sir? and I think that's really when the idea of having the focus on poetry for 30 days was useful for me as a teacher. And I just became more invested in the idea and highlighting not just American poets, but, you know, poets that at that time I was interested in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Bringing them to class. And after that, ever since I moved to San Antonio, National Poetry Month, it's really celebrated here, I think. You know, there's so many things going on, events, organizations doing something with poetry. universities, bringing in readers. And as a writer, I often also get invited to go do readings to celebrate it. So so I think since 2010, that's when I really became interested, and I bought into the idea of celebrating poetry.
That's great. I was already teaching in 1996, middle school, and while we were doing poetry and my students were amazing, I didn't even know what was going on the scenes of poetry. I had to put so much of my creativity down through all the 90s because I was just surviving too. And it wasn't until I was in a workshop in my early mid 40s with some of the people that put National Poetry Month together here in town. Jim Lavia Haviland and Naomi Nye were in this group, and you know, Jim's coming to group with all these pamphlets and excited, and I saw the scope of it and the importance of it in our town. Being, you know, submerged in teaching, it just, so much of your creative energy goes into the daily work of, of seeing the students and giving them an engaging experience. So sometimes that happens with teachers. We just cannot go out in the community as much as we'd like to because we're exhausted, you know, truly. So living that life as a creative as well as an educator is a very hard balance, and it takes a commitment and awareness, as Octavio was saying, and realizing that these two worlds really do need to interact, but it takes extra energy, and we have to draw from a deep well in order to do it. So it's been wonderful to be a part of National Poetry Month, especially since my poetry started to grow and after my first book was published in 2014, and just being surrounded by more and more writers here in town who were involved and inviting me, and me seeing, wow, this is amazing. And we have a wonderful program here in town called Mega Corazon, organized by George Cisneros and Kat, those two creatives who shake the world up, right? And it's the biggest live-streamed poetry event in the world because they stream worldwide. And the first time they did it, I think it was 12 solid hours of poetry, and I don't know how many poets they brought in, but it was just, it just ran. It was live. It was amazing. And they continued this for years and years. It's not as many hours. No, it still is the whole month, actually. Now it runs the whole month, with daytime programming for students to check it out, K through 12. So they want us to be, you know, clean for some of our poems. And then they, and then, you know, all the subjects are out there in after hours. So
Poetry after dark.
National Poetry Month followed Black History Month, and then Women's History Month. Black History Month, which was kind of ordained by President Clinton, I think it was. President Clinton. No, it was Gerald Ford. It was a Republican president who first, you know, established or legitimized Black History Month, and then Women's History Month, which was under Ronald Reagan. Of all people,
to Nancy Reagan.
And so it was under Bill Clinton, the Association of American Poets. It had been kind of celebrated here and there, but Black History Month, February, Women's History Month, March. So it was only natural to have National Poetry Month following April. And for me, I guess in the academy, although as a writer, I was a scholar also, and I wrote in different genres, so I wasn't part of the real poetry circle. And at schools like University of Louisiana at Lafayette, there was not a big deal about National Poetry Month. So when I got here, and Natalia introduced me to Jim, and Jim invited me to do a National Poetry Month reading at Senior Veggie.
Yes, I remember that. That's right.
And I just noticed the pamphlets and everything, and National Poetry Month was such a big deal here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great, but one of the, I guess, criticisms I kind of have of National Poetry Month is that it was founded to be to celebrate the achievements of poets and, you know, for us to honor ourselves, but also to help people in our nation appreciate poetry.
Right.
And I'm not sure we read to ourselves so much that we don't do enough going into bars and churches, right, and on street corners and places to spread poetry, like, you know, Johnny Appleseed or something. And that's what I would really like us to do to my neighborhood.
Right.
People, I have a little library in front of my house. I put poetry in it. Nobody wants to touch it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's what I would gravitate towards.
Yeah. Oh.
But they feel it's not for them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I would like us to make people, expose them to and make them comfortable with poetry in ways that, to some degree, spoken word or performance poets do. But I think those of us who write for the page could do a better job of trying to
expose people.
Yeah, expose and let them know that poetry is there for them too.
Okay. I love how you said natural, because it is natural poetry. It should be natural National Poetry Month. I love that, because it is a part of human nature,
right,
to speak in song and rhythm and in language. And it's part of our organism. It's a part of our brain that builds patterns. If you look at most ancient pottery, there's pattern drawn on it. There's a desire for beauty and a desire for song. Song is memory, song is history. The most ancient poems of the world, right? They were all oral tradition, and they were poetry, but they were documenting the history and the religion of the entire culture. Mm-hmm. And so poetry, it is a space, I believe, of spiritual shift, because of what it can do, it's an emotional space that our emotions can answer and can understand, and that's powerful. And Reggie's right. So a lot of people think, oh, I don't like poetry, but my students will say that, and then that's because they were punished with it when they had to do this forced, you know, academic dissection of it, and feeling that it's inaccessible. And not realizing that it's poetry that they go to in their most important moments, deaths, marriages, births, and also love, you know, all of the great topics that any of us try to tackle, every human being needs and goes to and might have a line of something that changed them, that flipped them. And National Poetry Month is helping people see the living poets of today, and maybe some of those who inspired them from yesterday, to help build our community and bring beauty in, because we don't have a lot of that.
Right?
That's true. That's very true. And I have another question that follow up with that. Last time we talked about community poets as academic poets. So, what influenced you more, the community poets that you may have seen in the neighborhood or seen at the spoken word, or more the traditional poets? Which one pretty much influenced you back then to start your art?
I think the first influences, like I said, were, you know, hearing my favorite musicians and just turn phrases that just sort of made me, I don't know, excited and blew my mind. And I'm a daughter of an immigrant Mexican man who kept me at home. So academic, you know, was the space where I was allowed to go to school. I was not allowed to hang out under the ditch where I wanted to be with my friends, you know, smoking cigarettes. So it came to me through academics, and I stayed in that silo for a long time, you know, thinking that this is what poetry is, and you end up in the Norton Anthology and whatnot, you know. But now the poets are my friends, and they're performing, and they're magical. They are Reggie, they're Octavio, they're Eddie Vega. They're just fabulous Carmen Tafoya people who are around us and changing lives and worlds.
Right? Okay. If I can, don't rag on the Norton Anthology. Jose Rodriguez, Jose Antonio Rodriguez from the Valley, who teaches at University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. He has two poems that are going to be in the next edition of the Norton Anthology. I'm playing.
The Norton is incredible.
A friend and Jose, but also that the Norton has changed from Old on a Grecian Urn to Valley poems and things like that.
That's true.
I saw that. That's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
In high school, and I'm a bit older, but we were hit over the head with Keats and Wordsworth and stuff, and reading about natural beauty in long ago England, and all that grew in our neighborhood was dandelions and concrete. And so we had no way of identifying, but then riots happened. And schools to pacify students brought in poets like a guy named Donna Lee, who changed his name later to Akeem Adebooty, and reading stuff like Black Pride and Black Talk and things like that, and Nikki Giovanni and Nikki Rosa, and poets who spoke in our language, and we started reading Langston Hughes and people of that nature. And when I wasn't the only one, found that we could use our own language, write about our own experiences in poetry, and that it didn't have to be, you know, tight little sonnets and things of that nature like Shakespeare. That was liberating. That was very liberating. It made poetry accessible to us. But we still have the same problem that so many students have to read outside of their language, their culture, their experiences, and they don't know there are people like them.
Right. Mm-hmm. They can't connect with the...
You're reading something foreign every time you read it because you don't identify with it.
Exactly.
So now, in San Antonio, you mentioned all these different organizations, these different poets. What's the scene like in San Antonio? What's the poetry scene? If someone wants to go out and enjoy a good reading or go to a nice little bookstore that's going to be, poetry is going to be prevalent, where would they go? What would you recommend? And who would you recommend they listen to or read?
There's so many places around, there's so many communities, you know, but San Antonio is also segregated, you know, in terms of the poets too. There's the academic poets and the spoken word poets, and not all of them go to each other's things, right? And then, there's a person in the city who's trying to fix that, and it's Victoria Valenzuela. She's done 100,000 Poets for Change for years now, and she brings poets from all over the city to create this social consciousness with this program and this programming. She participates at a national level every year, and she is also the executive director of Voices de la Luna, which is San Antonio's only independent literary and arts magazine, and Octavio was the poetry editor for that for a good years, and thank goodness. And there are these pockets, right? But we also have a loving city and loving people. I don't think the segregation is anything about malice or elitism, but it's about who you know and who you want to congregate with and who your friends are, and it's a vulnerable. Poetry is so vulnerable. Who do you share it with? And your workshop friends or the people who you stand up in front of at the Blah Blah Poetry Spot or the Dakota Ice House, which is just fabulous. Eddie Vega's curating that and on Sundays. And there's, of course, the readings, first books at the Twig happening all the time. And there's every college and university is having, has poetry readings for the different events that Reggie was talking about, or the different month celebrations, right? There's so much. A community calendar for all of this would be great, because a lot of it has to do with you know, coming along with a friend. Right. Know, bring a poem, bring a friend. Open mics are happening. This podcast is wonderful. So I'll stop because I know my friends want to talk about this too.
Well, you, I think you said a lot of stuff that I would say. There's also Viva Poesia at the beginning of Poetry Month, I think, at the that park on the south side. I forget which park it is. It's by the
yeah, that's right.
But it's Viva Poesia. I think it's. I want to say it's hosted by the city.
Mm. Yeah.
Or it's a poetry event that kind of kicks off National Poetry Month.
Right.
You have, as you said, Amiga Corazon. There's always something going on in the city that has to do with literature or poetry, mm-hmm. you know, and not just during Poetry Month. I think it's year round. You know, in October we have Verso Frontera at Our Lady of the Lake University. We bring in, you know, between 28 to 32 writers, poets, fiction writers, and I think that's the good effect that whoever originated, I guess the Academy of National Poets, probably wanted to happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a city to you know, highlight Poetry Month during April, mm-hmm. but keep going with
yeah.
it,
right?
With that spirit bringing community writers and poets. You know, Reggie hosts a reading series at the Carver.
Mm-hmm.
Poetic Republic also.
Yeah.
They hold readings of poets and I'm assuming other writers. Yes. I've only been there during when they host poets. Mm-hmm. UNAM San Antonio, the university downtown, they also often have literary programs specifically with writers and poets writing in Spanish.
Okay.
You know, UTSA, the mm-hmm. late Wendy Barker used to host a reading series there. I don't know if that's still going to be going on.
I think they're going to continue it.
Okay, that's good.
So
I think every university here, I mean, you know, we're kind of blessed with having so many institutions of higher learning, and all of them in their own way highlight and promote literature.
Mm-hmm. And these are free events. I mean, yes. They're free. Octavio's Verso Frontera is an enormous gift to our community. Enormous, because he's bringing people from all over the country. And then we have Macondo Week during the summer, which mm-hmm. is a workshop for writers that was created by Sandra Cisneros and is continuing here in San Antonio today at Trinity University. But Macondo's moved around. It's migrated from UTSA, Our Lady of the Lake, Tamusa, Texas A&M San Antonio, who's how they want to be called, I believe. But and Macondo has relationships with all of these places. The Esperanza Peace and Justice Center has poetry literary events all the time too. But I'm glad you mentioned Poetic Republic Coffee House, which is a very special place to us because it's open all the time and there's wine and they know what's going on. They put flyers up. It's a coffee shop with flyers about poetry. I mean, how great is that?
Yeah, that's pretty great. Mm-hmm.
And so the university's free readings, they're bringing. I saw John Updike once, you know, at Trinity University. Terrence Hayes was there not too long ago. Just the universities have this budgets for major, major writers. Sharon Olds was there not that long ago. So I would stand in the back of any room to listen to Sharon Olds without a seat. But there's just so, it's a saturation, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say?
Definitely. And if I can go back in time.
Sure.
When I was in college, I think I was still an undergrad, that I did programming for the Chicago Council of Fine Arts, and we had a thing called Dial Poem Chicago, where anyone could dial phone number and hear a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And we had people like Gwendolyn Brooks and Lucille Mueller and Ralph Mills and, you know, local poets. But the thing is that Chicago put a lot of money in the arts. in poetry specifically and other kinds of arts. And you could apply for a grant. And Sandra Cisneros and I, when we were much younger, we had a grant and we did a workshop called City Songs. Mm. Well, the difference in San Antonio is Texas doesn't really allow for that.
Right.
And so money, mm-hmm. for example, artist grants in San Antonio is from tourism dollars.
Uh-huh. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And San Antonio, I think, is a more dynamic, it's the most dynamic poetry place I've ever been in. I've lived all over the country. So
San That's kind of cool.
It is. So San Antonio is a virtual miracle mm-hmm. if you look at all the things that take place here, and so much of it is really organic. It's not really institutional. Some of it is institutional, driven by institutions, but a lot of it is just the poets themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really great thing about San Antonio.
Absolutely. Okay. I know the library has Young Pegasus, so they start them really young mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. I'm also from the Valley, so I wasn't exposed to as much poetry as I would have liked, but it's my favorite form of writing. I'm in therapy right now, which I know mental health is like a big taboo, but writing poetry helps me to kind of let all of those emotions out. And I use, well, like music as well, but more in the written, and I like to have a certain cadence. It helps my brain mm-hmm. release things in a different way from me just speaking words. So I was advised to write letters, and I chose to write it in poetry form to kind of process all my feelings, to kind of get, you know, past them. And, yeah, but San Antonio is very, very much starting them very young on, like, being creative and having them see their poetry in a book and, you know, the little ceremony that they have in celebration of all the children that participated. It's a really, really awesome event that we have, obviously, during National Poetry Month. Yeah, we have a little program here. It's called Creative Collective that one of our, one of my coworkers runs. And we had a gentleman who read two poems in Spanish, and it's very powerful. I think it was probably my favorite part of the whole hour. And so, yes, just definitely poetry for some reason here in San Antonio. It's very, very strong and very celebrated, and it's really nice to see. So just my two cents.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because you're talking about the healing aspect of poetry.
Correct.
And we know a couple of poetry medicine practitioners here in town. We've had several. James Brandenburg, who created Voices de la Luna, was one of the first. And we have Leisha Garcia, who is just graduated as a poetic medicine practitioner, and Syra Dimitru, who is one as well. And they work with students and people of all ages, really, on these very issues mm-hmm. to see the function of poetry, the right. internal function of poetry. And Sandra Cisneros said the best thing about poetry and healing when she was talking to some students of mine at the Bexar County Juvenile Detention Center. She said, I want to go and talk to your students. And so it was a big deal to get her there, but at the session she said, poetry is medicine because it helps you take the glass out of your heart. And sometimes it's a really big piece of glass. So you got to keep writing and writing and writing and writing
right.
to help you do that. And I think that image is so true and beautiful and vivid. There's such a healing aspect to writing. And I think many of us use it ourselves
right.
for the same reasons mm-hmm. that you mentioned.
That's pretty powerful words right there. That's pretty dynamic. I never thought of it as Raquel said, as a healing tool. Mm-hmm. Never thought of placing your mental health, just getting everything written out on the paper, keeping a journal mm-hmm. could help out a lot.
Right.
I want to circle back to something Nadalia said earlier about the song lyrics. And we had a discussion previous podcast mm-hmm. about how lyrics and poetry go hand in hand. So what are some of the artists that you find their poetry is pretty dynamic that you relate to?
Well, Led Zeppelin.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that one, but okay.
Now, I'm thinking back to teenage times when that was, you know, the access to lyrics that I had.
The Stairway to Heaven theirs.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But I can't figure it out. Even though I have so many degrees in English, I still can't figure it out. But the images are they're somehow alive in all in so many of us. I actually think that the lyrics are speaking to who they need to speak to. Mm-hmm. So my son is a hip hop artist. He's really turned on by certain lyricists, and I just can't connect, but he does. And so, you know, at 14, 13, Duran Duran, that was me. And I'm listening to these whispers and these sighs and these images of people running on the beach or whatever it was, but it was just seeing pictures in my mind, putting mm-hmm. a movie in my head. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what it's about. Mm-hmm. So artists and lyricists today that, you know, I would go to, I don't know, maybe Nora Jones.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
She's amazing.
Okay.
I really like Bob Dylan. Okay. Bob Dylan's
Nobel
lyrics.
Nobel Prize in literature.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Springsteen. Mm-hmm. But I think the lyrics that really, I think, combine poetry and performance for me are songs that come from Mexican performers. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. Vicente Fernandez. You know, all those artists that I mean, there's poetry in it.
Yes. Right?
But I think it's poetry that's not just, I guess, you know, just relying on the words. It's a combination of performance, mm-hmm. words, mm-hmm. music, right. You know, and there's something very poetic about that, you know, that, you know, I've never seen. I mean, I've seen grown men cry by listening to mm-hmm. to Mexican mm-hmm. rancheras.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that's not poetry, I don't know what is.
Right, right. So true.
I remember, I think it was a textbook I taught out of, and I was blown away by a quote, and this is Bob Dylan, and this was long before he won the Nobel Prize, saying that Smokey Robinson is the greatest American poet. Mm-hmm. But growing up, I grew up around that kind of music, but I was kind of weird as a kid in the ghetto who would sneak away and listen to people like Simon and Garfunkel. Mm. So things like The Sounds of Silence. Mm-hmm. And I forgot who made the song MacArthur's Park. What is MacArthur's Park? Is Melting in the Night or something. And just those kind of lyrics were so powerful. Recently, I forgot the country Western person who remade Tracy Chapman's Fast Car.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mm-hmm. loved Fast Car. Mm-hmm. And sometimes songs like that are so powerful in their messages, their mm-hmm. poetry,
yeah.
that they bounce from genre to genre right. because mm-hmm. they relate to mm-hmm. different people from different backgrounds.
Absolutely.
And how about the Smiths? I mean, they have great mm-hmm. lyrics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Morrissey. You know, and it's so interesting that I was reading about how Mexican Americans really like Morrissey. And I can see why. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a vulnerability that mm-hmm. that often you don't find.
Right.
And in the music, the performance, or the lyricism.
Right.
So.
That's true, because I was thinking back my old younger days of when you would listen to music. This was before MTV mm-hmm. or all those other videos. So the song, you would have the movie playing in your mind.
Yes.
You know, and that's how you piece the song together. And that's how I did it. Mm-hmm. And some of those things, like I'm a huge Beatles fan now, but when I was growing up, who were the Beatles? You know, I just listened to mm-hmm. James Brown, Lenny Williams was that one of the greatest songs of all time. It's just, but now I can appreciate because of what I heard in the past, Smokey Robinson, Tears of a Clown, all those songs, and that I can go back and listen to the Beatles and like, oh, wow, I could see what they're going through. I could see where the imagery is, not the beginning ones. I'm not talking about the first girl pop ones. I'm talking about the White Album and Rubber Soul, those albums, right, the Revolver, how you can actually see the evolution of their words and their lyrics, how it became a movie in my mind. Mm-hmm. So it's very powerful. And I tell you, that's a very good point because I've seen grown men cry and I don't even understand a lot of Spanish, but it's just powerful because it evokes so many emotions,
right,
that I don't have because I never experienced that, but those people experienced that, so that way it evokes the emotions. So poetry is a very powerful thing, and song is a very powerful thing, and imagery is a very powerful thing, and those together, just it's just a powerful weapon.
And the narrative and all those things. I mean, it's a pure form of poetry without, artifice,
right?
I think.
And so real. Mm-hmm. And it's so real. That's the main thing about it, because I appreciate the realness of everything. Yeah. Now, I'm a hip-hop fan, but it's 10% real. You know, it's all fiction. Mm-hmm. It's a good storytelling, but I like the old stuff, like just something that makes your heart ache, because you know what the person is going through.
Right? That's things why that I'm trapped in the 90s, because, I mean, honestly, the lyricism in the 90s is very... Every you felt every
you got OPP.
Word, yes.
I think her favorite was Color Me Bad.
I liked everything, but I'm more of a R&B fan, so I want that 90s kind of love, as they say, because it's so deep and you feel it, and it's not even in the words, it's just in the emotion that you feel in just the way the song flows. Like, they can just be, riffing off of, and it's like you feel it in your soul. That's, to me, even without words, is still poetry, because I'm feeling all of these emotions. You can't even explain it, and then the lyrics hit you and you're like, you have this aching in your heart. You're feeling everything. Like, you just go through all the emotions. That, and I love 90s R&B. It's my all-time favorite. But we also had a lot of remakes. Like, I'm a big fan, a big, big fan. Lauryn Hill's my favorite artist ever. And she did a lot of remakes. And she put a little twist on them, but the lyrics are the same. Mm. Exactly. I mean, word for word, she just put a little more emotion into them. And,
Which kind of speaks to the... subjective nature of poetry. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of us are going to connect to it in different ways just by listening to what you listen to.
Right.
Speaks to, to that subjectiveness, and that's why we have a lot of poetries in San Antonio, because everybody's responding to different things.
Right.
Our histories, our experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also universal.
Definitely.
I think the fact that we're all here in one room makes it universal, but at the same time, it's subjective.
Right.
And it's that honest delivery. I think that really honest delivery, and no matter what accompaniment is there, whether there's silence, whether there's drums, whether there's a beat, whether there's a howl or a cry, there's so much communication in the delivery that can speak from one soul to another.
Mm-hmm.
And open you up and transport you to the memories and the things that mean something to you. And they're going to pull those tears out that need to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And regulate your central nervous system. As my friend Carmen Galatayud recently told me, crying is good. It regulates your central nervous system. So never be afraid to cry. It's good for you.
Very true.
Definitely.
Mm.
Wow, this has been amazing. Don't want it to end, but a couple more questions before we close out. First, what would you like people to take away from this podcast? What message would you like them to know? What little nugget of information would you like to give them to enhance their lives, get more in tune with poetry or literature itself?
I would say head to a bookstore, then the library, but first bookstore. buy a couple books of poetry. Why? because poets need to be supported. And even though you can get books from the library and you can read them online and everything, that we need to support our artists. I had an early poem that was called Reggie's Rap, and it was a poem I used to give to girls. And one of the lines in it is that poets never have any money. Mm-hmm. So throw a few pennies at some poets. Right. But also go to events and not just one, because it's through a variety we discover things that relate to us, things that speak right. to us, poets who speak to us. So give it a chance, because there's so much garbage on TV and you never have a Michelob commercial in the middle of a poetry reading.
Right. Very true.
So good. I want to encourage people to go to readings, of course. Exactly as Reggie said, support the poets. We will do anything for a cup of coffee, pretty much. We'll do it for free. It's such sacred work, honestly. Mm-hmm. But poetry, what I want them to take away from this is poetry is a way of being alive. It is alive. The live expression of it is a way of feeling and transporting yourself to really a higher version of yourself. Mm-hmm. We have so much numbing. Our culture is a culture of numbing you. Right. We numb ourselves. And poetry really doesn't let you be numb. And when we are not numb, we are feeling, we're alive, and we can make better decisions about every little aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. And tie ourselves back to who we want to be, to our values. We say, oh, I value kindness, but when are you kind?
Right.
And poetry is a way of feeling alive. It's alive.
Mm-hmm. Practice what you preach.
Mm-hmm. Well, the takeaway from this podcast, just to remind people, our audience, that poetry can be very powerful. I'm just thinking about how often dictatorships, first thing they come for are the poets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're doing something, right?
That's very true.
Right.
They're saying something that needs to be said. And there's all kinds of poetry. I think that's the takeaway here, that you're not going to go to a poetry reading and on your first go, you're going to, expect to be completely changed.
Right.
Right.
You're probably going to hate it, maybe. I don't know. But I mean, poetry has survived, since the beginning of time. So there's something there.
Definitely.
And I think if you haven't yet given it a chance, maybe the takeaway here is just a reminder to go pick up a book, go buy a book,
right?
Support the poets and see what it's all about.
Right.
Great. Before, do you have any websites or any books you want to get out there before we close out the podcast? Octavio, we'll start with you.
You can find me on social media. You can find my website at octavioquintanilla.com. I have a book out, If I Go Missing, came out in 2014. And you should get a copy of that. That book's going to be it's going to be on its last printing, and it's probably going to take at least a year to get a second edition. And a new book coming out in the fall.
Okay.
From Texas Review Press, and it's called The Book of Wounded Sparrows. So hopefully by Poetry Month, we can have a pre-ordering link.
Okay.
So keep an eye out for that.
Yes, sir, definitely. Natalia?
I can be found on social media very easily, and I have a website, nataliatrevino.com. I teach at Northwest Vista College. Some people contact me through there. And I mentioned my book titles earlier, but I have a third book of poetry that'll come out fall 2025.
Okay.
And it's a full length on the the Virgin, and it's called Songs of Socorro. Okay. So I'm excited about that. And I want to mention Voices de la Luna as a literary magazine that's here in town, and people could check it out and see if they want to submit or subscribe.
Okay.
Awesome.
We have the easiest websites. Mine's reggiescottyoung.com.
And keep it simple.
I try to hide from social media, go on reluctantly to post events or what have you.
Okay. But,
I do have a book of poetry. It's called Yardbirds Squawking at the Moon. And poems, all of us have poems in different magazines and circulate in other words, in other ways. So, we've got work out there.
Okay. And the last question for Octavio and Natalia, what do you prefer, tacos or burritos?
Very clearly, it's tacos.
Okay.
Yeah, tacos.
Okay. Yes. Okay. You have to stay in a room, man. You have to stay in a room.
Yeah. Tacos are there's such a variety. Yes. So wonderful. What can you know? Yeah.
Delicious. They're like busted sonnets.
Delicious sonnets.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I really do appreciate your time, you sharing this with us. It was a great experience, and hopefully we can have y'all back again to continue this conversation. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
On behalf of Santa Fe Library.
Thank you, Reggie.
This is good fun. Thank you all.
Hey, thanks for listening, and get connected on mysapple.org with Twitter,
Facebook,
YouTube,
Snapchat,
Pinterest,
Flickr,
Instagram,
and follow TuneIn on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play Music.